I've never had the Zoom talk to us to tell us it's recording before.
It's okay.
So, hey everybody, welcome back to Black Belt.
Or Bus.
I'm Keely.
And I'm Misty.
And I'm easily amused.
Anyways, so today we're actually interviewing our good friend, Liz Mitrovich. Wait, did I get this right?
Yes.
All right, just checking. She's a black belt at Precision Jiu-Jitsu in Sacramento, California. And we're lucky enough to get to talk to her. She's been a black belt since 2019, has over several years of experience, has just done a couple of events, her and her friend Joy, if you're on Instagram, follow at Hose and Kimonos. They're pretty great to follow. And they actually just did a girls and geese event in Nevada together. And so she's got a lot of experience teaching, competing, et cetera. So thank you so much for joining us today. And I'm already going to apologize for me stumbling over words because that's going to be the theme of today.
Okay. She's got a lot going on. So I'm a little bit more clear than usually.
Not on the spacey
one. But today I'm good. I'm fine. So we're going to, you know, ask you a bunch of questions. We've already talked a lot about your history, but for people so they can get to know you, what got you into martial arts? Like the very beginning, not just jiu-jitsu, but martial arts.
Firstly, I want to say thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be able to be on. It's a great honor, ladies. To be honest, it's like I got into martial arts because I had a friend who said that. You know, I think you'd really enjoy this. And the first martial art I tried was Hapkido. It's a Korean Japanese martial art. It's pretty traditional, but it was primarily around self-defense. And I decided to try it after much of him trying to have me go and me saying, nah, I don't really want to. I don't really want to. I found out that I loved hitting things. which has turned into me wanting to learn how to choke things and break things. Although I've been fortunate enough never to have broken somebody before. So knock on wood, that won't happen unless they don't tap. Thanks.
Your fault.
Yeah.
I say that and then I stop when I'm just okay. Back and forth where it's like some days it's like, yeah, I broke it because it didn't tap, and other days I'm like, I didn't break it because it didn't tap and I felt bad and I let it go. And yeah, it's a weird up and down.
We're all like that. Well,
same. No, it's same. The only time I think like is in competition. I feel like that's the only time where I'm like, no, like I know if I give up this that they're gonna move on. And competition, I feel like that's the place for being like a little dog and holding onto the bone. Don't let go.
Yeah. And I've done that too. And I'm like, why are they not tapping? Like, you're just holding on and holding on, just following them around. And I'm like, why are they not tapping? So I deal with that too. Like, I'm like, they're going to break their arm and they're not tapping, mm-hmm. but I'm not letting go. And then it just turns into a whole thing. But
see, and then I've gotten to the point where I'm like, I need to go to work the next day. So I need to make sure this person can go to work the next day. And it's like, I take on their safety responsibility as my own. Yes. And because I've gotten so used to doing that in the gym, it carries over to competition. And then I'm like, why the fuck did I do that? Like, I'm letting this person get the $5 medal because I didn't just break their arm. It's weird. And then there's like you and I, we both had the bum knee. And as we were rolling, we'd immediately do something and be like, nope. Nope, we're both damaged on that side. We got to stop.
Abort, abort, exit.
So how did it kind of switch once you started up keto? Because, and you said that was more of like the self-defense and deciding that you like hitting people and being able to break and choke. How did competition fit into all of this? Was it from the beginning of jiu-jitsu that you were like, I want to compete? Was it something that you were... We've talked to a couple of people where they're like, I never wanted to compete. And then all of a sudden I was competing. And was like, oh, I guess this is my life now. You know, so kind of how did competing fall into your grand plan?
Okay. I probably should say like, so in Hapkido, I started that in 2010. And because of the way it's ran, it doesn't really have competition. I'm a very competitive type of person. I think that's just always been how I've been, but like a healthy competitive. And so because Hapkido did not have that opportunity, after I received my black belt in Hapkido, I wanted to expand and learn more martial arts. And that's where jiu-jitsu kind of fell in. I was kind of tutoring between judo or jiu-jitsu, and I went with jiu-jitsu. And after doing it for about 3 months, I loved it so much. I was doing it basically every day or multiple times a day, and trying to get in as much as I can. And fortunately, we had like some brown belts that ran some local organization tournaments, and they had an in-house tournament that was at our gym. So I decided to sign up for it through their encouragement. And from there, it was just nonstop. So it's kind of exactly what you said. I tried it out and learned like, oh yeah, that's for me. Competition is so important to me because I think it gives you focus on what to do next. Like in jiu-jitsu, you have so many areas to work on. It's never ending. And in competition, you can at least see where each section of your game you've tried out against somebody else with resistance, you can try. So that's why I think I fell in love with competition and why I continue to compete. And I just don't think I'll ever stop. It gives me focus to reorganize or just like discipline my own game and keep myself moving forward. Yeah.
How do you balance teaching and being a competitor? Because Keely and I have this discussion a lot that we run into because now, you know, she's become the women's coach at the gym and she's assisting his class and she's coaching us at tournaments. And then now I'm not officially a kids coach, but I take over the classes.
She's a kids coach. Let's be real. she's there more than everybody else. Yeah. She's a kids coach. She knows all of the little gremlins by name. You know, I say that affectionately now, oddly enough. Yeah. I like the gremlins sometimes.
Yeah.
When I can make them do burpees.
Yeah.
But.
But like, how do you balance going from like, okay, competitor, because not only are you competing, you're competing with other high level females. You're competing against well-known women in jiu-jitsu, but you're also like doing camps and seminars and, you know, teaching the classes at your gym. How do you balance that mentally?
Because we're kind of stuck in we're always prioritizing other people's teachings. You know, even when we're in class, it's like, oh, well, this person's stuck. Let me go help them because we're normally the upper ranks in the room. So we're so focused on other people. How do we balance being selfish and being like, well, I need to get ready for this? Like, we've got moments where we can do that, but just in the gist of things, it seems like 99% of the time we're so focused on the people around us rather than ourselves. And then all of a sudden we're like, we feel behind the curve. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. That makes complete sense. It's absolutely a juggling act. Like, I sometimes feel like I've gotten it down and I'm like, all right, like, I'm balancing everything. Everything's good. And then somehow I've dropped one ball and all of the balls fall on top of me. And I'm just, what the hell happened? So it's like some days there's good days and sometimes there's bad. But one of the ways I try to make sure that I'm getting in the quality and quantity of training I need to try to be at the level I'm trying to compete at is I make sure to set aside time and create mini goals in the sessions that I have available. So I map out my week. I know how much time I should be allocating for teaching or what I'm going to be doing training. And during those training sessions, I make sure that I have set it like a mini goal to try to achieve. And so those little mini goals help me stay on track to try to reassure my mind that I've done enough, because even in helping people, we are improving ourselves. The more we can help others and try to create a better game for them, we are reinforcing our own knowledge when we teach. And so I find that even if it's not something that's in my game that I'm teaching, I'm learning maybe how to defend something somebody else might do. Because if you're teaching how to do it, you're also learning the defense.
Yeah.
So I think about it in that way, and that helps me keep my mind in a positive mindset so that I can try to continue to balance all of these different balls I'm trying to juggle.
So can you give us an example of maybe one of the mini goals that you set for yourself? Is it like a technical, or is it one of those like, I'm going to hit this move, or I'm going to play here, or I'm going to, is it kind of like a physical, or is it a mental being like, I'm going to think about constantly going back to something? Or is it kind of just whatever for that day, like the flavor of the day?
I mean, that's a great question, because it's really dependent on what I feel I need at the time. So a good example is like, I was competing in the beginning of the year in January. Master Worlds of 2020. I was in the finals and I lost because I got caught in side control, and that was the rest of the match. It's a 6-minute match. I was in it for probably maybe 4 minutes of that match. And so when I came back, I was like, that's not going to happen again. So I would make it a goal to be put into side control and fight a way out of it. So like maybe my goal for that situation would be, okay, we're going to be put into side control and you need to get out of it and escape. And then maybe I'll have somebody either put me in side control, like such as positionals, or I'll work that. So I'll work to get into side control in a role, and then try to get my goal to be escape or any of that. And so it's great about that is like, it will allow me to choose partners that might be larger than me so that I have more pressure or does that make sense?
It does. And kind of to piggyback off of that, whenever we're doing some of the roles in which it's not a situational, so you don't start in that position, do you ever worry about developing bad habits by being like, I need to get them in this position? Because I do that with some lower ranks, and then I start to develop these habits where I let them get there because I'm like, I'm working to get out of it, but then I'm not working guard retention like I should. And so that's why sometimes I have to do situationals where they start there rather than letting them get there, because I start to develop these bad habits.
Absolutely. So another one I tend to do with that same goal, if it's going to be something that puts me into an inferior position, is I try to incorporate like a point score. So I want to try to keep track of my points while I'm rolling. That's one of the ones that I tend to pair up with that. Or one of my other ones is starting off knowing I'm down on points and I need to work on my sweep. So I'll let them get into that position, but I know my secondary goal is that I'm already down on points. I need to sweep. So it teaches me like that quickness of trying to get out of that position as fast as you can and work to try to change a position to come up on points, whether that's taking the back or sweeping from guard or something like that.
So helping develop that kind of sense of urgency to get out rather than spending the whole time period. So yep. Whenever you're doing a lot of these situationals, what time frame do you like to work with? Because some days we switch it up where it's like, all right, for maybe like 5 minutes, every time we reset in this bad position, or it'll be like every minute we alternate and go back and forth. Do you have kind of like your sweet spot where it's like 2 minutes, 3 minutes? I don't, just to really, like you said, help with that urgency rather than being like, oh, I've got 10 minutes, I can coast here. Cause you know how some people, they'll get in the position and be like, I got my points, I'm gonna hang out here for the next 9 minutes. And then you're like, we didn't do anything. So do you feel that maybe if we do shorter time frames, it would help with that sense of urgency? Or should we continue to develop to make sure that you can roll for that whole duration of time?
Because I compete at 10 minutes for black belt, I feel like if I put 10 minutes on the clock, I'm like, okay, you have to get out and you have 10 minutes, it leads to stalling. and the sense of urgency kind of dissipates. So I find the sweet spot is about 2 to 3 minutes. 1 minute is really good, but unfortunately, unless like that's like towards the tail end of my camp, I find like the 1 minute goes, unless it's like what you're looking for, you're looking for like a high-paced, quick action type of, I would do 1 minute. Mm. But I find like if you're doing 1 minute situationals, it's not enough unless you have a lot of people in the room. If you have a lot of people in the room, 1 minute are great to try to get a variety of bodies to work on the same position. Not only bodies, but a variety of skill level in different games that people like to try out and do. So mostly if I'm going to be working with like one or like a few people, I like to do 2 to 3 minutes because it's enough time to try to work, but also a little enough time to try to get out. It's also good because if we're doing an IBGF point wise, you have the person on top. I like to do this too, is to have them be called for stalling. So it works like if you're working on just holding, being the top person, 2 to 3 minutes will give you enough time to be stalled out and get penalty points. So I think that's an important thing to learn for the top person too, because if you're working on trying to retain and hold, you still need to be active and trying to progress your position. So it incorporates both people into trying to work on more mini goals versus just one person trying to get out of the position.
Yeah. So something I'm kind of struggling with right now, and I try to ask as many black belts this question. So when I'm working with a white belt and I'm rolling with them, I'm battling between this, like, I don't want to say kick their ass, but I need to make them work. But then at the same time, I'm like, they have to learn. Like, I can't just do that. I've got to help build their confidence. I have not been able to figure this out, because I'm like, I'll roll with a white belt and I'm like, there's literally no reason for me to tap this, like, this person over and over again. And then at the same time, I'm like, but that's how I learned, you know? I'm like, I'm struggling with this. What do you do when you're working with the lower rank to help?
I was going to say, when you figure this out, let me know, because I still have problems.
Me too. Can you tell me?
What's the secret? So frustrating, because I was rolling with
The frustration, because I've, this has been like, you know, like when you get in the shower and you've got great thoughts and you're like, I should have written that down, but you can't write it down. These are like my shower thoughts, like when I'm sitting like in the shower or something. I don't know. Anybody else do that? Just me. And it's one of those where it's like, I feel like the frustration comes more from, well, this is what happened to me. And you're like, but I hated when this happened to me. So you don't want to do that. But at the same time, you're like, this is how I learned. So I don't even know if so much if it's like, I know part of it's like, I shouldn't have to beat their ass. But another part of it's like, no, I need to show them jiu-jitsu works. So sometimes I have to beat their ass.
Well, I think when I said it in the terms of like, well, this happened to me, it was more so of, you know, people weren't going to take it super easy on me because I wasn't going to learn that way. And I didn't. I had to learn how to respond to certain timing. Like with one of our purple belt females, when she was training regularly, she would come in and me and her would work for an hour and she would just beat my ass. But I asked her to. I was like, let's go. We have an hour. When was it? It was Hannah. And it was like,
I was sitting here like, dude, I was like, no,
she was still a blue belt too.
I was like, oh my God, she kicks
it. No. But we would work for an hour and I'm like, let's go. And she would just roll with me and just take my arm as much as possible. She'd choke me, but it was like, I have to respond to her timing more and more. And it got to a point where I was able to defend arm bars so much more. Like if you had a crappy arm bar, my arm was out. So I learned the difference. And then, but there's times I'm rolling with a white belt and I'm like, it's almost like they're pitiful and you're just like, I can't do this to you.
Okay, wait, no, I think that's part of it. you were able to communicate that that's what you wanted.
Yeah.
We can't just go up to some white belts and be like, do you want me to beat your ass today? Or do you want me to let you beat me today? Yeah. You know, like, we can't just ask that.
Yeah. It's trying to just cultivate, I guess it's just figuring out how to cultivate that environment.
But without babying them or making them feel less than. Because it's like, you don't want to be like, hey, I can beat your ass. Like, yeah. I'm being nice to you. Like, you don't want, like, no matter who you are, you don't want to just do that to somebody. I know I would not have, as a white belt, I felt like I was the biggest bother. Like, I didn't want anybody to have to work with me because I felt like I was taking from their training that they had to put up with me.
See, and I was the opposite. I go up to, like, the highest ranked person and the biggest highest ranked person. I'm like, you want to roll? Like, let's roll.
But oh, my gosh. Misty, you are an outlier.
You're the opposite.
But I wasn't trying to prove something to them. I was just like, all right, like, let's go. You know, like,
I wish more people had the mentality that you had, Misty, because teaching, like, before I taught jiu-jitsu, like, I taught Hapkido for UC Davis. I co-instructed for, like, years. Once I got my black belt, I helped them teach classes. And UC Davis is on a quarter system. So every 10 weeks, I would have fresh new people and new students, like college students. And there would be about, like, 30 to 50 students in a class because it's for PE. And most people don't go up and ask the instructors. They're asking each other, because they feel more comfortable with somebody that's equally ranked or equally inexperienced versus going and ask. And that's me too. I would totally ask the white belts until I was around long enough to understand, oh, we all don't know enough together. Go ask somebody else that has the experience. Mm-hmm. What a concept. I wish more people would want to ask the upper belts. That.
Yeah. Well, my main training partner for Nogi is, he was a brown belt at the time, he's a black belt now, and I'm 6:30 Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. He's my training partner, and I would go up to David and I'm like, why are more people not coming in this class and working with him? And he's like, I don't know. So he was my training partner, and it was awesome because he helped me with so much. And once I was working with him more, then it was easy for me to, like, go over to another academy and ask upper belts to roll. But at the same time, I wasn't trying to prove something to them or myself. I was just like, hey, like, I got to learn from this role. Like, I know I'm not going to win. I'm not going to tap out this, like, purple belt dude that's been training twice as long as me, or four times longer than I have. But I'm trying to figure out, like, how do I channel that into another student? Because she and I have also run into the problem where we have white belt women who are like, I don't want to roll with you. Like, I'm scared to roll with you. I'm like, why? Like,
yeah.
What did we do?
Well, it's weird when it's one thing where it's like, it'd be different if we all rolled consistently enough that at some point I had beaten your ass to be afraid.
Yeah.
But it's like, we barely roll. And the few times we have rolled, it's been one of those, like, you can do it. But, yeah. So it's like, where is this fear coming from that some people don't want to work with you, where they're like, oh, you're going to beat my ass. And it's one of those, like, we've never really worked together. Why would you automatically assume that's going to be the default?
Yeah. Or I think they see us rolling with some of the guys that we roll with, and where we're able to turn it on 100%. Like, I'm not going to be passive rolling with, let's say, Manuel. Like, we're going to give each other the same energy. So they come in, see me roll with this guy that's got like 10 pounds on me, and we're just going 100%, and then they're so intimidated by that. But I'm like, you got to remember, I've been training this certain amount of time, and when I came into this program, I had to, you know, be like, I had to roll like this. But it's changed so much, and now I'm like, how do I help those people build that confidence? How do I, and not just the confidence, but I also want them to feel safe when they're rolling with someone like at an open mat, and they don't have a teammate around that's like, hey, mm-hmm. like, watch out for that person. They're going to hurt you. You know, I've been battling with that more and more, while also trying to be a competitor. But what you said was really helpful about starting inside control, or like those positions where like, okay, I didn't do well in this last competition. Let me start here in the gym. But yeah.
What's helpful for the, like when I do that is regardless of their rank, like having somebody be put into side control or something, that's that little mini goal. As I get closer to competition, I try to stay with people, that would provide the resource that I'm trying to achieve. Most of the time that means that I'm going with upper belts versus lower belts, but there's a time and a place for lower belts. Like white and blue belts are great to practice moves that you are trying to learn or try to develop. Because if you try to develop a move and you try to take it straight to the hardest thing you could, so if I try to take a move I'm developing and try it against Chad, which is a black belt and the owner of Precision Academy, if I try to go against him with this new idea and concept, I'm most likely going to immediately get it disrupted or passed or not be able to refine it to being 100%. So there's a good place to try to work on your development and your creativity as a jujitsu practitioner to work with lower belts. And so I tend to do more of the creative phase before my camps so that I want to keep jujitsu fun, trying to work and roll with them. So that's when I have more of the creative phase, but they still can help you if you're working on like a specific position or something along those lines, because their reactions tend to be different or a little less refined.
Well, sometimes when I get stuck, I'm like, I need to go with somebody really new to put them into, I've talked to her before, to put them in the really weird position because they don't know how to respond. So they don't limit the number of responses they could give. So we've talked about this, have we?
No.
Oh, my bad. No, sometimes I did this to you when we first started training. Where if I get stuck, and normally it's like me passing where I'm like, this keeps happening to me. What are my options? And in my mind, I'm like, I have to do this. I have like tunnel visioned my options and I go through all of them and I keep going through them and none of them working. I will do the same shit to somebody who's brand new because they don't know that this is my option. So they do off the wall shit. And then it's like, oh, that's a direction I didn't think about. And then when I do it the next time, I'll try doing something weird that they did to see if it works. Cause they're not limited by what they think they should do. Cause they don't know what they don't know. So they're like, I'm just going to flail. And sometimes it works. So sometimes it's like, oh, I didn't go that direction because I was worried about this, but that actually worked. If I wasn't too worried about the next step, cause sometimes we're like, oh, but if I do this, I'll expose. And then you don't realize that is the correct response. You're just picking the less of two evils.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's really cool about that is like, if you take that concept and apply it to competing in tournaments, is that we all come from different schools. So we most schools should have like a general reaction, right? So we're going to have a response that most we should do, like, but there's a certain amount that is unique to your academy and unique to your training partners that you refine against people who know your game really well. And I guess that's the importance of competition and cross training, is that you get to see different pieces of jiu-jitsu that you might not have anticipated. That's why beginners are, it's good to roll with them, or if there's somebody new at your academy, to be very welcoming to them so that you can share the knowledge with each other. Yeah.
Do you feel that by competing it's altered your teaching style?
That's a great question. I think it's really helped me recognize that there are certain things that I teach that use a lot of energy that I might not use in competition, because they're less efficient. So I think it's altered the way I teach, because I try to talk about, it led me to identify what things are efficient to do and what moves are inefficient, and you can do them, but they might not work 100% of the time. And if you're going to be doing something in competition, you want something with the highest percentages as possible. for success rate.
Yeah. I kind of want to shift a little bit because I was like just thinking about this too, like things I wanted to talk to you about. So you compete in different tournament settings, like IBJJF and then the Fight to Win. And when you were here, we had gone to that Fight to Win event that Keely competed at and won, which was like awesome. How did you, and for people who are listening, when Fight to Win had their, was it their second all-female card? Is that when you started commentating? Or you commentated on that card?
Yes.
Because they've
yes,
had three now?
Yeah.
They had
three. Two of them?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So how did you get like involved with that, or what made you want to do the commentating for the
commentary
or commentate whatever?
Commentary.
Neither of us could talk today, okay?
I was just sitting here like, I'm not gonna do it. I can't.
Look, she's a doctor now, so I'll let her get away with
her. I love how as we're laughing, Zoom is like, are you playing music?
So yeah, like how did you get involved with that or wanting to get involved with that side of the competition?
Because you've known Seth Daniels for a few years now, haven't you? Or yes. for a while?
Yes. I learned about Seth through my old professor, Dustin Akbari, and him and Seth had actually known each other before Fight to Win, like right at the beginning of Fight to Win. Like they connected a long time ago. And so I learned about Seth Daniels through that. And when they first came to the Sacramento card, that's when I got in contact with him and started to learn more about the organization and create this friendship that we have, which I'm very grateful for. Man, commentating. So because of the relationship we've had, anytime I just try to be very professional, quick as possible and response rate, and just give him any, he's a busy man. I just try to help him as much as I can and try not to be a nuisance at all. So when we had the opportunities to compete on the first all-female card, Joy and I, we competed, and man, I can't remember what initiated us doing. I remember the first all-female Fight to Win card, the commentary that was put for the first one, did not have such great reviews, and part of it, one of them was that when Joy was competing and myself, that they were, the females that were commentating didn't highlight female jiu-jitsu. They were highlighting a lot of their own life, which is, there's a place for that, but I'd say that's more podcasty versus commentating. You want to, when you're commentating, you want to give like either play-by-play or just kind of explain to people who might not know what's going on, what's happening in the match. And because of the commentating that happened on the first card, that really highlighted Joy in an ill light. She was like, fuck that shit. We can do a better job. And so that's what we started our proposal to start doing the commentating for the female cards. We really tried to do the best we could and try to feature, our goal for that whole Fight to Win female fight night too was to try to highlight the athletes as much as possible. So we sent out surveys because we don't know all of the women, but if you want to do a good job of trying to promote the female community, and we knew how many eyes were going to be on there, promote each athlete individually in some way. So like explain what their accolades are, try to make them more humanized and more of an athlete versus just watching a match of two females that you don't know fighting each other. As you move up the ranks, like more people will know who you are, but at least if you put out these surveys and could explain their accolades, what they do for their job, what their aspirations are, what they want to do in their career with jiu-jitsu athlete, it would help do that. And so that's kind of how we got into the commentating. And unfortunately, we haven't been able to do another female fight card together, but the third female fight card, Kelsey Carter was able to, oh gosh, is it Carter? Yeah, it's Carter, right?
Yeah.
Yes. it's confusing.
Well, for people who are listening, Kelsey's been on the podcast. You guys are training partners.
Yes.
Which is also funny because Chad got his black belt and he trained with David, our coach, for years.
Under Hoffa.
So it's like,
y'all are like our sister gym on the other coast.
We're like extended family. It's like when you go to a family reunion and you kind of like meet cousins you've never met before. It's like,
well, it's funny because we're on the same coast as Kelsey's actual sister, Kim.
Yeah.
So we interact with Kim a lot. So it's like all of us all know each other. And sometimes it's like, oh, we need to tell the listeners who people fucking are.
Because it could go into like this crazy tree that, you know, we could.
Jiu-jitsu family trees are a thing.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother conversation for another time.
But we'll go back.
But it's a thing.
Yeah. So Kelsey was on the other card with you. Yeah. Or not card. Well, competing. Not that.
She helped with commentary for the other card, because then you were also doing commentary and competing, because then she was coaching you. Because some of my favorite pictures, one was from that night, and then another was from my night, where y'all's little heads are just peeping up over the stage, and we see y'all yelling at us. Like you, David, and Hoffa, all of your little heads peeping up is like one of my favorite photos.
Yeah. Yeah. But back to that, like she helped you with that.
And y'all's big, beautiful binder of information. I'm like, I love organization and notes and stuff. So that was just like, was nice. Yeah. It was a nice touch.
And the energy's so different. So many different kinds of like tournaments and competitions have, there's a change in energy. Like you can always feel it. Super fight energy is so different than
tournament.
Or like 100%. A local tournament versus an IBJJF. It's so that like, change and intensity so different. But as a competitor, because you've been on that stage multiple times, you've also commentate, like you've done the commentary for the tournaments, do you have like a preference now, or do you just like to compete for like whenever the opportunity presents itself?
Or is it one of those like, if I could have this environment but this rule set in this time, you know, is there just one of those where it's like each one for you has like its pros and cons, where you're like, oh, if I could do one all the time, I would do this because the atmosphere is like my favorite and it's like the most relaxed. But one of those, like when I really want to test myself, I want to do this because I have to focus on this kind of deal.
I think I want to compete on anything. I would try to say like, I feel like I perform better on submission only style formats, but I think that I want to have different rule sets because each rule set tries to negate like certain things. Like for example, EBI, that was to help like stop the point stalling. And well, now we have people stalling for EBI overtime. We have, you know, now I'd say with Fight to Win, they've learned how to work the system of submission attempts. So now they're just trying to rack up submission attempts. And so like each time you have different rules, you're going to have somebody or athletes learn how to, what is it? Oh, no, it's on
the work the system.
They know how to work the system because we had this conversation with another when Sophia was on the podcast, she talked about like, if you're gonna win competition, people who win competitions the most, they know the rule set. And we had discussed that too, where you were
like how some of them understand, I just need one advantage and then I can coast, or I just need to do this one thing and then maintain, where it's, and I've described it as like there's a difference between some of the athletes and then some of the competitors. Like, yes, all competitors are athletes, But when I think athlete, I'm thinking you can put them in any rule set, they'll adapt and they'll still perform. Whereas some competitors are so specialized for a particular rule set and they know how to manipulate the rule set to be a good competitor for that rule set. Like how some people are strictly IBJJF because they know how, what that one game is that they need to do to win. But then you throw them in a different set and all of a sudden their game plan doesn't work because it's not formatted to that rules. Yeah. So that's why, like, in my mind, I'm like, sometimes it's like, you can be a great competitor, but sometimes not be a great athlete because if you put them in somewhere else, they fall apart.
Yeah.
Whereas for some of like these very well-rounded athletes, they don't perform well at certain competition formats because they haven't specialized the game to that competition. And that's the frustrating part.
Absolutely.
That's the frustrating part.
But I feel like if you challenge yourself to get better at those different formats, that can really say a lot about your jiu-jitsu as an athlete. It means to me that you're very well-rounded, you're adaptable, that you can, you're like you're a gamer, you know, it is a game of chess with our bodies, for jiu-jitsu. So I feel that if someone who is successful, regardless of whatever rule set there is, like that, this is the type of athlete I aspire to try to be. I want to be successful in no matter where I'm at. I also want to try to make jiu-jitsu exciting. So one of my goals is to try to not only work the system and learn how to be the best in each tournament, I also want to try to make it entertaining. And try to aspire to want to submit the person regardless if there is points or not. So I'm not trying to just get my points and hold and stall out. I want to try to work to a dominant position so that I can work on my submission. If I can get there.
Yeah. And it says a lot about you because Keely and I were fortunate enough to attend your camp when you were here. And
spoiler alert, it was bomb. And I use the one thing I use the most, honestly, and I've worked with the girls the most, are all the grip breaks to set things up. Mm-hmm. That's actually been like my favorite part where somebody, like some of the guys would be like, how are you doing this? And I'm like, oh, because I break the grip because Liz showed me how to do it. And they get mad.
But you're so knowledgeable. And when we had a question, you were able to branch off and like, be excited because we were just asking these questions. You're like, oh yeah, I love this. And I mean, it says a lot about you. One is it like a person, a teacher, and like a martial artist and an athlete where
you were so excited to share the information. Like you were saying, like cross training and competing mm-hmm. is all about sharing information. And sometimes we meet people and they're just like, I'm not going to teach you my secrets because how dare you use them against me? And then it's a flip side meeting people like you, who's like, here's everything.
Yeah.
Like take it, do something with it. Because, and we've had a conversation with David too, where it's just because you tell somebody all the letters of the alphabet, it doesn't mean that they're going to be forming paragraphs and sentences immediately, you know, like they got to learn the words. So a lot of that has to do with technique too, where you talk to some of these specialists. And for some people are like, yeah, here's all the stuff, because they know you're not going to immediately be able to replicate it. And then other people who are like, I'm not going to teach you. I'm not going to tell you what to do. Like, go, you know, and it's frustrating because sometimes it's like, that's the whole fucking point of me asking you a question, because I want you to tell me what the answer is.
Yeah. I mean, and then also like for me, like I feel like if I can share something, I know that I learned it from somebody else. It's like, it's a game of telephone. We're just passing the knowledge down. And I know that if something I could show could possibly become their move, and they could eventually refine it and add their own twist on it. And then maybe, you know, I can either watch them compete with it or they'll tell me about it, and it could then improve my own game. It's beautiful. Techniques can be altered into your own after being taught by somebody else. And that's why I'm so open about teaching everything I know, because I mostly do fundamentals. People got that stuff. It's my own twist of things.
I think that's my favorite.
I hope you guys can take it and make it better.
Yeah, well, it's like, I think that's one of my favorite parts about going to black belt seminars. Because, like, if you deal with purple belts, we like flashy shit. And it's overcomplicated. And we're like, you've got to do these 20 steps to do this one thing. And you talk to a black belt and they're just like, shit, you can do 2 steps and you're done. Like, I appreciate the simplicity, how y'all are like, why would I do all this extra work when I have a move that will do it in 2? And I'm sitting here just like, David will send me stuff all the time. And I'm like, quit. I'm like a squirrel. I'm like, quit sending me shiny objects. I'm like, I have to focus on this. And I'm like trying over here and he sends me stuff. And I'm just like, that's pretty too. And I'm like,
but I love like with what you're doing, like you're cultivating such a healthy space for, and not just women, because being at your camp, the most people that attended one session was our co-ed 6:30 class. That was the most I saw people in attendance at your camp. So you are providing a healthy environment for women, which is very important, but not just that, for everybody involved in jiu-jitsu, which is really cool to see.
So, and I don't know how much this happened to you, but what you don't know is that, so you taught the women's class at our gym at UFC Gym Greenville, and then immediately taught the co-ed class. And then you were at Alliance for the rest of the week until the seminar that Saturday. And throughout the week, and even some of like our classes, like the weeks following, it would be funny because some of the guys, they knew we were at all your classes. So some of the guys would walk up and be like, all right, she showed this. How do we do it? And so then it'd be like, all right, we worked on this at the seminar. Let's go back over it. But it was really funny how they thought they were all nonchalant and they'd be like, so did you take videos?
Yeah. And it happens a lot. Like when we're training with black belt women, the guys will be like, so what did you learn?
They don't want to, like, some of them don't want to go or go ask, but then the second they see us, they're like, we know y'all went. We know, oh, yeah, you took notes.
So Manuel came up to me and he's like, what else did you learn from her? So I showed him my very, very beginner Imanari roll. Like, and I was doing it so crap. Keely's like, leave your foot in the middle. Leave your foot in the middle. I don't know. But I showed him one time and he's like, oh, what else? And so it was awesome that you were able to do that for everybody, like in our area.
Because it also opened up the door for some of those guys to start working with us too. So by you coming in and being a black belt female, showing how knowledgeable you were, it opened up the door for a lot of the new students that we hadn't interacted with much, because they were like, oh, they know some more things that we don't. And they just didn't have that awareness. And for example, like you using me as the uki, they were coming to me because they were like, we know you know what it is because she does it to you. So it was really great being like, yeah, she did this to me this week. So I could give them immediate feedback, being like, do it to me. And I could give them immediate feedback because you had performed the move on me the whole week, right? And so for some of these, it was new students that I hadn't really talked to yet. And so it was able to break the ice. You know, like you served as that kind of, some of the teen guys could come up.
Sorry, I wrote something down because I had an idea for something. And I was so, she looks at it, I don't want to be like, what the hell?
I was sorry.
I didn't mean to distract you. I mean, the effect that you had, just to know like that's followed from being here, and for people who are listening to the podcast or out in California, because of like so many restrictions are changing state to state, and you know, knowing that, you know, if their academy closes, there's another one open, and they have, you know, a knowledgeable female black belt there, which is super cool. But I wanted to kind of go back a little bit to the whole fight to win thing, because like we talked about, because like we didn't really want to talk shit about the first all-female card. It was one of those things that got me heated and angry.
All platforms have already had their moment. That moment is past.
But
we're just going forward, yeah. Especially as like a female community, the only way for us to get better is to give it is criticism, but in a way that is developing future commentary rather than tearing down the past. And I think y'all did that by taking it in a positive life and switching it and giving more of an example of like, all right, this is what we want to build off of, you know, just taking a lot of the reviews from that previous commentary and going forward without harping over that previous commentary. And especially like going forward and seeing it, I've actually paid more attention to how people do commentary. So like whenever we've had like guest guys come in that are doing commentary for things, I've actually paid more attention being like, what do we and do we not want to hear? Yeah. So being able to talk about the movements themselves, concepts, what they could be focusing on, what they may, maybe their game was, if especially for some of these well-known people, talk about like traditionally they do this. So it might be something different in terms of like what that match is.
Yeah.
But this is just more of like a personal, because so I've been asked like, are you going to do any commentary? Cause we've got the podcast, and I'm just like, shit, no. Cause you know, purple over here. I know. Cause it's one of those not being aware of some of the things that are happening. And I feel like with commentary, a lot of the people are seeing you as that specialist during the time to explain to them. So it's one of those like, yeah, they should do this, this, and this. And a black belt's over there. Like, what the fuck are they talking about? No, they shouldn't do that. You know, especially, so I love hearing from upper ranks, like the black belts and brown belts, because it's one of those, I would have said this, and that was really, really wrong. I shouldn't have been doing that. You know what I mean? Or knowing what's actually going on.
Yes, I totally understand that point. However, if you pair yourself up with a brown or a black belt, it can provide a more well-rounded approach. Additionally, I only started commentating when I was a black belt, which is completely fine. But I think if I would have had more opportunities or created those opportunities as a lower rank and moved up, I'd feel so much more confident and comfortable knowing what to say in the commentating. Because Fight to Win was the first commentary I had ever done. So what a stage to just be thrown up at and hope that we did really well. But since then, I've had the opportunity to do some of our local events, Arte Suave Elite, and I've been able to, I too now listen to the commentating that's happening on Fight to Win and recognize what I don't like and what I do like so that I can refine my voice as a commentator. For example, not last week's Fight to Win, but the two cards that were in Arizona, Jake Watson from Open Guard Podcast, I think that's their podcast name. I really hope I didn't screw it up. They did the commentating for the event, and it was probably some of the best commentating I've heard for Fight to Win. You can just tell how well refined their comfortability level is on it. Like talking over it, I'm assuming it's because of their podcast that they feel very comfortable. So plugging in certain things like the Fight to Win bets and what the favorites, what the odds mean, they were just able to put it in so quickly and smooth that it didn't detract from the athletes. It was just always at the most appropriate time. It was very well done. And I feel like that's something, the timing, if you don't get a chance to practice, you're not going to develop as quickly as you could. So that's why I would recommend it. Believe in yourself, Keely, do it.
I think she's also taught. So it's when you have to teach people, and not just jujitsu, college students.
Okay, but teaching college students the difference between a penis and a vagina is different from teaching somebody in jiu-jitsu the correct mechanics for, like, breaking somebody's arm.
Yeah.
If you're really concerned, pair yourself up with a higher ranked and then have them leave those part of the discussions. But I do think there's value in having somebody who is purple or brown do commentating, because what you might see and what they might see would be two different things. But if you're judging a purple, Fight to Win's a good example, there's all belt rank levels. And so what you as a purple belt might see versus what the black belt might see, if you're commentating on a purple belt match, might be more appropriate. And so, yeah, give it a try.
I'll have to throw myself to the wolves, maybe try it sometime.
So you were talking about like your goals and stuff. What are, do you have big goals for jiu-jitsu, or are you just finding your goals as you go along? Because you're teaching, you're competing, you're, you know, doing all these things. Do you have other goals that you're trying to reach, or are you just kind of going with it?
I feel like I'm a very goal-oriented type of person. I know that if I set something out and I say, like, this is what I want to try to achieve, it keeps me in the direction that I'm trying to go. And so I pretty much always have goals, but I'm always refining those and checking in on myself, because I feel like if I set a goal too high and too lofty, which is always the best thing to do, always shoot really high, because you'll be further than you are now. Like if you set something super low and achievable, you might be able to check that off, but it might not develop you as much as you shot for something super high and you weren't able to necessarily achieve it, but you gained up so much more ground than if you had gone for an easier goal. So some of the lofty goals I have, of course, like I unfortunately, as a black belt, I haven't been able to achieve the gold in world championships or pan championships. And I'm really still trying to achieve those type of goals. And I'm trying, let's recap. Only rewind that for a moment. I have my plan is that I'd love to open up my own academy. And when I do, I want to make sure that I have appropriate accolades to entice people to want to come. If I find as a female black belt, I don't think there's enough representation. And the unfortunate part about being underrepresented is that you aren't out there for more athletes to see. And so when you just open something up, if you're not well known or somebody who has those accolades to back you up, you might not have the following and pool of people to come visit your school and your studio.
Yeah.
And so that's part of my big goal and why I'm trying to focus on those championships, is because I want to have that pool for when I open an academy up.
Yeah. Well, as you were saying that, and I was listening to you, it's, I admire the person that's within that journey. So like you being a black belt, working towards these titles, and then there's the person that's already like achieved these titles, they're already like the world champion, they're running these seminars and people are just coming in because of their name. And just because someone has a title doesn't mean that they're going to be a good business owner or a good teacher or be able to rise people up to that level as well. And I wanted to, you know, now that we're interviewing you today, I wanted to talk to you because, you know, after the Atlanta Open, I had this breakdown. Like I broke down when I got home. I wasn't upset that I lost, because I was proud. He's like, it's okay to not win. I was like, it's not that I lost. I was like, I felt like shit physically. I felt like shit mentally. I stayed in the competition because my competitors signed up. They trained for that tournament. They were ready to compete. I wasn't. And so since that happened, I was like, okay, I don't want to do pants. That's more like a logistics thing. But I'm like, okay with not wanting to go to pants or do the Charleston Open. And it sucks, but I'm like, I'm still like a blue belt. Like I'm a blue belt. It's an important belt because it's part of the journey, but I can win a world championship.
It's not
right
a definition
now.
Of the journey.
Yeah. And it's like, I can win a world championship as a blue belt, but I could go in my purple belt and not win anything at all. Like point blank period. No, she's.
I'm like, oh, thanks for slipping that in.
No.
Not winning shit over
that's
here.
Fine.
But as a competitor and as a black belt, I feel like with where I'm at, or like, what's your advice? Because I just feel mentally like it, like, it's okay to not compete like these two tournaments and then go to something big. I don't want to feel guilty, but I also still want to be goal oriented and self-disciplined, because I haven't been. I'm like, I feel like shit. So what are ways that like I feel like I can start working towards those big goals without overwhelming myself?
So how did baby blue belt live?
Yes.
Because you started competing early.
It did. You know?
And I was getting ready to say, I competed like the 2.5 months in. Like, I get that part. So what, like during that time, what got you through it? Or if you could tell your blue belt self, yeah, like, I just, hey.
I need some black belt wisdom. Black belt wisdom. That also likes to be creative and stuff, because I deal with too many analytical, not her. I wasn't pointing in this direction at her. I mean,
what is today?
Our main coach is too analytical, and he's an engineer. He's smart, but just like being in this rut, I'm just, because there's one part of me that's like, I almost feel guilty I'm not competing, because it's like, well, you should try and get better. But then there's another part of me that's like, okay, but it's that balance, you know.
Yeah, I actually, when I was in my lower ranks, the first IBJJF tournament I ever did was at 2015 Blue Belt Worlds, and I went out there and I totally lost. I got armbarred and lost, and I continued to compete locally before I moved up to the IBJJFs. But that is, I think, because of the way my academy was, that I went from white to black to through. I was, Joy, myself, we leaned on each other pretty heavily, because we were basically the only two female competitors. We didn't really have any male competitors either. And so
I feel like y'all are the upper rank version of us. This is us in a couple years, Misty.
I mean, when we started, she started 6 months after me. So I was a blue belt by then, and she was a white belt. So we were always like right next to each other for support and trying to encourage each other to compete and go out and just try, go out and see what happens. So I did not compete a lot when I was in my lower ranks, and it wasn't until my purple and getting into brown belt that I really started competing in IBJJF tournaments. And I think that's why I also really like submission only tournaments, is our styles were mostly submission only. So we didn't really do too many point sparring. So I'm actually playing a lot of catch up in that game and that's another reason I've created those goals. I've only started creating those goals since turning black belt, because I had fairly good success in my lower ranks. And so I didn't have that need to develop that and try to create those many goals. It wasn't until I got to black belt and I went through the ranks really quick. I got my black belt after 5 years, and the biggest unfortunate part of that is when I started competing against the other female black belts, they were already the top of the top, and I was very low, and I didn't have the same experience level that they did competing in those events. So wrapping it back and going back to it, I think if you're experiencing competition fatigue, focusing on like giving yourself grace and embracing that, definitely don't feel guilty. Always feel, definitely don't feel guilty, and feel comfortable with the decisions you make for those tournaments. And a good example of, I'd lost in brown belt, and I decided randomly, I didn't even do a camp. I didn't do anything. I just signed it. It's not that I didn't do anything. I was going to class like I normally would, but I didn't do a camp. And 2 weeks before Worlds in 2018, when I was a brown belt, I decided to sign up. And I ended up winning the brown belt Worlds that year. It was, I just signed up. And I think it was just the lack of pressure. When I sign up for something with a long period of time, I build up, I do a camp, I build up all this pressure, and I feel like, oh, I have to win this. And coming to realize that regardless if you win or lose, it's about the process of getting there that can help improve you. And if it's the stress of holding that, just take a realistic look at it. Of course, we want to go out there and try to compete, to gain the experience, to feel more comfortable in the environment. I feel like that's why a lot of people do the opens and do a lot of the competition events, is to try to improve on your adrenaline dump and try to improve on your game plan if you have one, and just work on refining those. So when you do the bigger events, like, you'll have the experience and the comfortability in that time to go out there and perform your best. But if we're going out there and we don't really want to be there, the difference of winning, of people who win the division and people who might have been knocked out in the first round, is a lot of the times it's mental. So if you don't want to mentally be there, sometimes you can't pull up that extra push to go. And so just taking that mental check of, I'm good. Take that time. And another thing is like, when I was in my lower ranks, I didn't really understand the importance of winning world titles. And that was probably because of my upbringing, of my school, which I don't really, like, that's fine. But also, like, when I won it, it didn't mean anything. I was like, I don't know what this means. Yay. So there's also that, but, oh man, I totally lost my train of thought there. Where was I? It's gone. You're no.
Good. It's okay. We can circle back. Yeah. You're good.
Well, that puts a lot of things in perspective for me. Like, I think because we have so much access to seeing high level athletes, be it social media, flow grappling, YouTube, you know, even watching UFC, we have access to see this, like, potential. So it's like, we jump into this sport and we're like, hey, I'm going to do that too. I can do that. Or, you know, and then you just want to jump to, like, do, you know, pans or worlds and just starting out, and it's like, where do you find that healthy balance between just having that ambition and self-belief, or this, like, did you do what you need to get there? And, like, the local tournament thing is so important, and it's so frustrating at the same time, because the local tournaments we have, we don't have women sign up for.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and what some people don't talk about is, you know, we go to some of these larger tournaments, do well, and then we get back to our gym and we're getting our ass kicked. How that impacts everyone mentally, being like, how come I can go out here and perform well, but then I can't perform well on my day to day? And, you know, we think that, or like vice versa, where it's like, you're getting your ass kicked every day, so you don't feel like you can go out there and compete at a high level if you're not doing as well as possible. So there's a lot of give and take that people really don't talk about as often, because you only see the wins. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't post how they got there, or that it's like, you felt like shit every single day leading up to this moment, you know, or that, like, we've talked with a couple people, some ranks, you don't win at all. Like, it's very frustrating. It's frustrating. But as we start to kind of wrap up, one of the questions we have, like, a couple questions we almost always ask a lot of the people that we're interviewing, and one of our favorites has been, what would be a piece of advice you would give a new white belt? But since we're focusing so much on competition, what would be a piece of advice you'd give a white belt wondering if they should compete for the first time. You know, we see on social media, everybody asks all the time where they're like, hey, should I compete? And it's like, you're asking total strangers. So here's your opportunity to listen to a total stranger who is a black belt, who is informed, who started early. So what would be your piece of advice to give a new white belt thinking of competing for the first time? No pressure.
Okay. I would definitely say, you know, you're never going to feel ready to do a tournament. So you should just go out and do it. If you have any, if you've thought about doing it and you're like, I don't know, then you already know. You're never going to feel ready. And you should just go out and try. Because after your first competition, you can have a better idea of, well, that was shit. I don't want to do that again. Or, man, you know, I really enjoyed that experience. I'm going to go do it. And sometimes it's not, you might not necessarily enjoy the experience, but you appreciate what you've gained from that experience. Like, what I mean by that is you can go out there and you could lose, or you can win one and then you lose one right in the finals or something like that, where you gain some experience of feeling the win, but you also experience the low of maybe losing. So you have like, oh, it's kind of bittersweet, but it's good to have those experiences so that you can kind of decide, okay, this is for me. And the journey of going through that, I've had validation in my experiences and my techniques and I'm good to go. Additionally, I would say if you're going to go out and compete as a white belt or just really any belt and never really competed before, just know that something I've had to learn is your friends are going to be your friends, regardless if you win or lose, they're going to be there for you. And if they aren't there for you when you do lose, then you might want to reconsider them as friends.
Yeah.
You want to have a healthy environment for creating the most opportunity to grow. And if you have people picking you down when you might not have won something, you should reanalyze that maybe. So like for me, one of the little mantras I say is like, regardless of the result, I've done everything I could do to prepare myself. Or like, even if I don't feel it, like, oh my God, I don't really feel like I've done enough. I always say that because it's true. I've done enough. And so if you've done the tournament, if you've signed up and you're going to do it, you've already done the hardest part signing up. And really just go out there and try. What you're going to learn is the more you compete, regardless of the result of winning or losing too, is it's going to be all about your performance. So looking back at myself competing as, I don't have any footage when I was a white belt, but from blue belt and seeing it from where I'm at now, you can see the difference in performance. And that's what you'd really, I would say for a white belt or somebody who's just starting out, to focus on your performance, because regardless of results of winning or losing, you can really say like, oh, that was a good performance. Like I executed this well, I did this and, or like, oh, I didn't do this very well. And this is the reason why and how to improve upon that performance. Like try not to focus on the winning and the losing. We all love to win and it sucks to lose. But if you don't focus on your performance, you're going to have a hard time analyzing and seeing where you've grown and developed or how fast you've been able to execute a move from one belt to the other. That's what I would try to, the advice I'd try to give.
Good advice. Lots of good stuff.
Is there anything else you wanted to include that we maybe didn't hit on or cover in today's episode?
I feel like I'm on the spot. I don't know.
If you think of it later, we can always do another episode.
Yeah, we can. Do you have any seminars or is it Artist Suave? Yeah. Do you guys have any competitions coming up? What do you have going on?
Tell us about your life so we can stalk you.
Yeah. know these things are happening.
Or to look out for.
Yeah.
I just stopped. I'm still going with that one.
Okay. So we do have some Arte Suave happening. Arte Suave Elite is an organization that is nonprofit, and we grapple for as cause is their slogan. So they have a nonprofit that they choose each time they do a tournament, or not a tournament, but their super fights. So a portion of their proceeds all goes to that nonprofit. And if you guys happen to be in California, I'd highly recommend checking out Arte Suave Elites, like applying for them if you're going to be in California, because it's a great organization. It's a really fun event and it's just a blast. And currently they're doing them basically every month. I think the only month we won't do it this year is going to be in December, but that's because of the holidays. So I definitely would recommend checking them out. And the next event we'll have is going to be August 28th, and it's going to feature primarily teens and kid athletes. So
awesome.
Yeah, I know that there are some organizations doing that now, but I'm very excited to see the next generation competing. And for me, the next competition I'll be doing PANS out in Florida. And from there, the rest of the year is pretty crazily booked. We got PANS, Nogi Worlds, Master Worlds, and then Adult Worlds. And I've signed up for all of them. So if you're, if you happen to be in the area or competing at the event, always come by and say hi. Very friendly.
I'll see you at Masters Worlds for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Trying to get my life together, so I don't know where I'm going to be at.
Come to Vegas weekend with us then.
I know.
Do you have any seminars going on, or are you just getting ready for those competitions?
Mostly just getting ready for the competitions. But if seminar opportunities come up, I would gladly love to go out and take that opportunity.
And if people want to set up a seminar with you, what's the best way to reach you?
I would recommend reaching out to me on Instagram or on Facebook. I do have an athlete page there as well. So you can message me and I can get back to you.
Okay. And we'll put that in the bio too for the podcast. We'll put your Instagram handle. We'll put Precisions. And then does Arte Suave have their own Instagram, or do you guys just post that? Okay.
They do. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. We'll put all that in the podcast bio, so people have a way to get in contact with you
and stuff.
Very cool.
What?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you again so much for being able to talk with us. We definitely want to have you back on. I know we had such great conversations for the camp, and I know we had originally planned to do a podcast episode there, and then I lost my voice because that was great. But thank you so much for being able to set this up. And I know if anyone hasn't already started following you, they definitely should, because of all the words of wisdom you've shared with us.
Yes.
Thank you so much for hosting and having me be a part of it. I really appreciate it.
You are very much appreciated, Liz. And
thank you all for listening. Definitely check her out. And that's it. I forgot what I was going to say. And I said, thank you.
And to the listeners, thank you for continuing to listen to the podcast and support us. You are also very appreciated.
Hey, okay. Bye.